The DL Debate, presented by Brendan Devaney, is in association with Sarah's Kitchen at Sister Sarah's Letterkenny, serving food you'll love with outdoor dining. Book now and enjoy the Sarah's experience.
Welcome one and all to the latest episode of the DL Debate. Thanks so much for tuning in now on Highland Radio or back via podcast. Well, listen, we've got a county final coming up. We had none last year. We have two coming up this year. Well, we live in hope. We never know at the minute what might happen. And I'm going to be joined later in the show by Brendan Kilcoyne to tease out his thoughts on the county final. And of course, our Miners' brilliant victory on Friday night over Armagh, taking us in to the Ulster Minor Final. Now, just at the weekend, the Michael Murphy Sports and Leisure Hurling Championship results. St Union's with an easy victory over Carndonagh, 320-45 points. McCool's went down against the holder St Tanta, 124-14. And the hurling is kicking off now after our side's defeat in the Nicky record. Next weekend coming up, we have McCool's playing St Union's, Cairn play Buncrana, and Burt and St Tanta do battle. Always a bit of spice in that game there. And just one result caught my eye from the weekend there, and that is a Ruas victory, almost back to Division 1, 4-12-2-7 over Termon. The old foes of Arua. Joining me now on the line is a man that used to know and used to have a few battles with Arua. It is former St Union's player and manager, as I say, now part of Luke Barrett's management team, Brendan Kilcoyne. Brendan, welcome to the show.
Hello, Brendan. How are you doing?
The very best, my man. You keep him well?
Wonderful.
Wonderful.
Exciting times, Brendan, with the Miners.
Yeah, good man. Even on the Monday, say you've got a bright attitude towards it. I love it.
Yeah, well, listen, when you're facing into the workload I'm facing with my day job here, it's not too easy. But
how many cups of coffee have you had already?
We focus on football.
Get the caffeine in now. Get the caffeine in. Brendan, I'm just looking at the Rio there. It's they've been outside of the, I suppose, the top table for so long. They've been building up a bit of a head of steam. I'm surprised they've been away that long, Brendan, but they're on the verge of coming back up, I suppose, back to senior championship and back to Division 1, and can only be good for, I suppose, Donegal and for a club of that history to be back. It's great to see.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, you know, Rua, you would remember, Brendan, you know, back in the late 90s, you know, they were the team. We had a couple of Titanic tussles with them around that time. So we had, and you know, they're a big, strong, there's a huge tradition of football down in that area. And, you know, moving on, I suppose, from the Miners of last year, I see a couple of our Miners, Kyle Murray and Keen Rooney, involved with the Arua, which is very pleasing to see. They've been playing a lot of league games with them of late. So it's good to see young fellas progressing through the ranks. And, you know, I suppose Donegal needs places like Ballyshannon and more coming from Inishowen and that to help develop the county side. But it certainly is pleasing to see Arua come back through again, so it is.
Yeah, yeah. And Brendan, just on that, before we get into the game and I suppose the minor championship as it's been so far, that spread of players right across the board, you know, speaking to Oisin just on the last show 2 weeks ago, just about the, I suppose in many ways when you often look to underage football and, you know, you used to look into the programme and it would be all the top teams were producing the players of the future and that, but this certainly isn't the case in the minor squad that you're developing there. It's the spread of players is from all over the county. Are we seeing, I suppose, work maybe coming through from underage from all the clubs?
Yeah, I think so. And I think it's kind of, you know, some things just generate that way too, Brendan, from the point of view, you know, you look at this year's squad and it's not, you know, you expect the big four at senior level to be huge contributors. Like, but apart from Ben Rafferty from Kilcar and Dara Furry, who unfortunately is out injured from Gidor, you know, the Glenties aren't, and Niamh Connell aren't represented on the squad. St. Junan's aren't represented on the squad. So there's only them two lads. So, you know, you're getting a lot of lads. You know, Glenn Finn have three starters on the team. McCool's have three starters. So, you know, you can look at it and it is positive to see that, to see players coming from these type of clubs and, you know, that'll bring them back into a strong position you would hope in years to come for development of Donegal football. And there is a great spread of, you know, clubs from across the region on the minor squad this year. And, you know, you correctly said, Brendan, you look down through the years and they were probably dominated by, you know, the stronger senior clubs, but that seems to have changed for some reason. And it might be just a one-off, Brendan, like we don't know kind of thing. I suppose we don't know what's coming through in the next couple of years, but it is encouraging to see these clubs producing players of the quality that can play inter-county minor level.
Because I suppose, man, there's such a deep aspect to that. You know, you have their presence in the club then, and their presence, say, in their club minor team. And, you know, obviously everybody in the club obviously loves to have county players, but for the teams that haven't had that, just the fact that players step in there, you know, get that, I suppose, bit of notoriety, get that bit of county experience as well, which will hopefully progress them as well, and then pull up the rest of the teams around them, because that's what it's all about, competitive natures, you know. And I just see a lot of work being done around the coaching level now at Donegal. I'm just wondering, as you said, it could be one of those years, but it does feel like, you know, everybody is putting their best forward in terms of trying to get lads up to their best. You know, no longer is it just kind of whoever gets the job. You know, at every club I see, you know, talking to junior clubs and different people, like, there's a big focus on who's actually going to get the management, what's their style of coaching, and how they're going to progress things. It used to be years ago, remember, somebody take the job more or less because there used to be a player or whatever it was. Now, you know, people are really invested in getting a manager and a coach. It doesn't really matter where they come from anymore. It's about getting the right man in, which could have I suppose, a bit to do with what's happening here.
Yeah, and Brendan, a lot of work is going on in these clubs, obviously, at underage level. And, you know, that may be reflective of Donegal's success at senior level, where it is really attractive for young fellas now to wear a Donegal jersey. But that won't happen unless you have the structures at club level and that you have the proper coaching methods that will entice these lads to play football from under 10, under 12 through to minor and then on to under 20s and senior, Brendan. And, you know, evidently there's a lot of work going on in every club in the county to develop that and to develop these players. And as you mentioned there in your intro too, Brendan, you know, about players coming into the county squad, and, like, there's no doubt about it, if you get 4 or 5 months training with the county squad at the facilities and convoy, you know, it is going to make you a better player. You're going to learn because you're with good coaches and you see what's happening around. You're with better players than, you know, no offence to club level, but when you step up, obviously, the level to inter-county level, the pace of the play is going to be quicker. You move the ball quicker. Your decision-making has to be better. And, you know, that can only be beneficial for these young lads that are coming through these squads, so it can. And they take that back to their club then and develop on. And they get a huge rise out of playing for their county, and it gives them great encouragement to push on. I suppose a worry and a concern would be, you know, with the minor now at under 17, keeping these players ready and keeping them updated, I suppose, Brendan, to make sure that they don't drop off between the 17 when they're finished with the 17s and going into under 20 and then progressing on to senior level. But it's encouraging that, you know, clubs are doing so much work at this level and producing players of the quality that they're producing. And, you know, I suppose you look at Donegal's record in the last few years, it hasn't been, you know, great at minor level, let's be honest about it, kind of thing. So it is great that these lads now are in an Ulster final, and it's a great lift for them in that respect, Brendan.
Yeah, yeah. Brendan, just a word on the training centre and convoy. Mick McGrath didn't want to call the centre of excellence. He says, these young boys coming there, they're not excellent yet. It was an interesting point of view on it, which is fair enough. But Brendan, just going there, you know, I know as senior players, obviously, if you'd been around Donegal a while, you want to go to good training facilities and all that to help. But just for young lads, Bryn, coming in, they're a place to get. Having been up at convoy, and I know a lot of people listening might have just seen pictures of it, like, not that many people would have visited. But there is an aura about the place of I suppose, in terms of progression and professionality. Listen, I know it's an amateur sport, but as much as you can, you want to focus lads' minds. So having a place like that, you know, I mean, I'm just thinking back to when I first started playing for Donegal up in Drumbow, in the muck of Drumbow. You know, it was an absolute disaster. But if I'd have been walking in the convoy, I think it would have made an impression on me. I know it's only part of it, but your experience of training the team up there.
Ah, yes, it's a fantastic facility, Brendan, and it's a credit to everyone involved to get it to the level it's at now. You know, the pitches are just in superb condition, and you know, you go over there and you just feel that you're entering into something special. And I get Mick McGrath's point about calling it a centre of excellence. I don't know if that's the correct word for it either, but or the correct naming of it. But it is a fantastic facility. And I can only imagine, like, Brendan, you know from your county days, and I know from my own kind of, You know, we didn't have facilities of that level, so you didn't, and you were moving around from one club to the next club week to week. You didn't know where you were going to be. Yeah. Whereas now you have that stationed in Convoy, and you know, I can only imagine lads coming in there, and not only, you know, you see the minors training there, but the minors are training maybe in one side of it, and then you've the seniors there, and it can only good for them young fellas to see the seniors doing their bit of training and to see them floating about the place. And there's a great atmosphere over there, so there is. And you know, I think it'll be a huge benefit to Donegal football in the coming years. And as I say, credit to everyone involved to get it to the level that it's been at. Because, you know, we were over there a few years talking out when I was involved with Donegal, and you had porter cabins, and it wasn't ideal, and wet wintry nights talking out in the dressing room and having your shower in the dressing room and then eating your dinner in the dressing room kind of thing. Yeah. You know, it wasn't the most hygienic and that. But now that the centre is complete, it's top class, you know. And you know, you're talking about what players have in England and the Premiership, these training centres. It's right up there with it, Brendan.
Just taking me back to an old Drumbo story, Brendan, where we could only shoot on the one goals in the practice pitch. If we shot on the other ones and the ball went past the barrier there, the farmers used to go out and take the balls on us. This was the kind of as a county team, it was. I mean, it's laughable to think now, Brendan, when you think where it's gone. But that was the truth. You only allowed a hand pass, and they won the goals. It mustn't have had.
We have Paddy McGinty looking after our footballs, and I'll tell you, anyone that could get away with one would do very well.
Well, that farmer moved quite.
They deserve it.
He handed the balls into the Garda station, and this was the kind of keeper. It's hard to believe, Brendan, but that's what happened. But Brendan, and just to get us into this season, you know, our three teams there, the minors, under-17s, you say the under-20s, and the seniors, all drawn in the preliminary round. The seniors obviously went out in the semi-final, so did the 20s. So it was last man standing, Brendan. The pressure was on to keep the season going, but just came through, Brendan, in what was really tough conditions, really low scoring affair after accounting for Monaghan. And was it for Monaghan the first game, Brendan?
No,
Antrim, sorry. You said a walkover against Antrim, sorry, and then defeated Monaghan, and then went into this Armagh game, Brendan. As you say, so much for summer football. I think it was more like a winter game.
Yeah, well, there was a rainfall of monsoon proportions, Brendan, just as the ball was thrown in, and it was this sheet rain that comes directly down, and you know, it did make conditions difficult. Now, that said, I didn't feel that, you know, that we were as sharp as we needed to be, particularly in the game, Brendan. And you can, whilst you can put some of it on the conditions, I think you have to give Armagh credit. They were very well set up defensively, and we did find it hard to break them down. They just clogged up the middle, and you know, perhaps we were a bit hesitant at times, you know, maybe going at them a bit more. But eventually, and the one thing about this team that I really like, Brendan, is, you know, they just stick to the task. They don't give up, and they eventually found a way to grind it out. But trust me, Brendan, been on the line on Friday evening, it was tough watching at times, so it was, because we really struggled for a period of time. And Monaghan then, you know, got a couple, got a couple of scores. But our lads stuck at it, and I think, you know, the sending off did have a bearing on it. But we showed a lot of maturity to be able to grind the game down, and then created a brilliant goal, like Luke McGlynn finished a brilliant goal to the net after a great move. And then after kicked a free kind of thing. But, you know, sometimes they say semi-finals are there to be won, and that was it. Yeah. We didn't leave, you know, we'd say the week before, after coming through against Monaghan up in Clonus, there was an air of euphoria about the place after grinding out that win, when we ourselves were down to 14 men for most of the game, Brendan. But the last day, it was just a relief to get over the line and to know that we could be preparing for an Ulster final to be played this weekend, Brendan. But again, it comes back to the will within the team to just keep working. And, you know, we defended well, and we just created the couple of crucial openings then that were able to get us over the line.
Yeah. And tell me, Bryn, conditions aside, what was it, 4-2 at halftime?
Was it under? It was 4-2 at halftime. I think, you know, I think four teams didn't register on the scoreboard for 15 minutes. And you were thinking, my God, are we looking at a nil all draw here?
Yeah. I mean, 165, it's hard to believe, Brendan. I know conditions obviously played a part in it, but even in the worst of nights, that still comes down to the tactics of the game. Was this tactic coming more from Armagh and did we mirror them? Was both teams playing? Did we shape ourselves on how they played? Where did the real rigid defence come from?
Not necessarily, because we basically don't set out, I know from our side, we don't set out to be ultra defensive, but you mentioned it there. Sometimes if a team is set up like that way, you have to mirror it, Brendan. Yeah. And they were set up, you know, they got 13 men behind the ball from the start. And, you know, I mean, for Miners, they had some real physical, big, strong guys. So they had, and they were just clogging up the middle. And it wasn't pre-planned. It was a combination of them setting up really defensive and our lads, as I mentioned, Brendan, maybe just been a bit hesitant. Maybe we overemphasize not taking the ball into the tackle and they decide to move it across the field then, Brendan. And, you know, you have to realize that these laddings are 15, 16, some of them, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was an element of occasion and nervousness at the start of the game too, which was a massive challenge for them going into an Ulster semi-final. And we just didn't do enough to break down our mat stages. And, you know, we were probably lucky enough to get the scores towards the end to get us through in the night.
One thing caught my mind, Bren, was the fact that, listen, Kieran McGee was down as man of the match, and he just popped, you know, he's a cornerback, he just popped out a number six, Oisin Caulfield. You know, I'm just thinking about the future. I keep looking to see where our future defenders are. I mean, at the minute, Donegal need a six, they need a couple of cornerbacks, fullbacks. So it was encouraging to see those guys stepping up and being the main men.
Yeah, and the aforementioned Carol McGee from Dunloy, you know, really tight marker, dogged, and loves to get up the field as well, Brendan. Like, you know, he can mark and get up the field. He's pacey. Like, he kicked a huge score for us in the second half when it was needed, and it kind of, I felt it was the crucial score of the game because it gave the team a lift. He kicked a point from distance. And then you have Donald Gallagher from Glenswilly. His brother Jack was also on the 20s, was very good for the 20s, and good inside marker, Cormac Gallagher from Termin. So you have some good inside markers there, Brendan. And, you know, I thought we had a couple of good lads last year, cornerbacks, like we had Keane Mulligan and Keane McEntee as cornerbacks last year on the minor squad. And I think these are the type of lads that Donegal, as you correctly said, need coming through, because it is a kind of lost art that is coming back. We do a lot of work at training on one-on-one defending and, you know, our defensive setup, so we do. So, you know, I think the lads are benefit from that. And they enjoy the challenge. They set themselves personal and team challenges before every game. And, you know, they get a great kick out of it. So they do, Brendan, you know.
Yeah, and listen, what about the final, Brendan? I mentioned Fermanagh, obviously they were blitzed by Tyrone in the semi there. Tyrone, always there, thereabouts. There seems to be a clash with us and them every year, no matter what. It seems to often be in the balance between the two counties. But very impressive from them in the semi-final.
Oh, massively, you know, and I watched it back a couple of times, Brendan. Like, you know, they've put up outrageous scores. They've actually put up 9 goals and 37 points in the 2 games that they played to date. So they obviously have a lot of talent. And, you know, they've Cormac Devlin, I think he's Horace Devlin, young fella, and they've 2 inside forwards, Michael Holm and Cassidy, you know, who are really, really good players. And if they weren't wearing a jersey, you'd nearly know they were Tyrone footballers, Brendan. You just know by the look of them. And just Tyrone seemed to have a habit of producing these quality inside forwards. You know, the Dazzler, you're thinking Mark Bradley, Lee Brennan over the last number of years, these kind of inside, natural inside forwards. So, you know, there's no doubt in their scoring potential. I suppose from our point of view, you know, we got to, you know, identify the matchups here and make sure that we can get them as correct as possible, kind of thing, you know. And, you know, they're going to be coming in, Tyrone are going to come into the final with massive confidence. How would you not, after putting up 2 huge scores like that? And I'm sure they're going to go in as raging hot favourites. But that said, Brendan, you know, we feel that if we can, you know, keep it tight and stay with them, and, you know, that we have every chance. I don't think they've come up against a challenge like we're going to present. We are good defensively, and I do feel that we can really put it up to this Tyrone team. Now, it's a massive ask, so it is, obviously, but we know that we'd be well prepared and that we'd be ready for the challenge that lies ahead there, Brendan.
Great stuff, and listen, we'll all be behind you. Brendan, it's Friday night. Has the venue been confirmed?
No, I'm just off to Luke there. I thought it would have been at this stage, so there's mixed talk about it being in Enniskillen, Celtic Park, maybe even the Athletic Grounds, which I think would be, you know, to drag Donegal from all parts of Donegal, the likes of Michael Callan from Glen Colum Gill to Armagh on a Friday evening for a game, I think would be a bit far. Like, you know, I was hoping it would be Celtic Park, But listen, these decisions are outside it. They're again the uncontrollables, Brendan. So yeah. I expect to have word today and on the venue.
Yeah, great stuff, Brendan. Hopefully Celtic Park. You know, we can't underestimate the presence of fans. How many is allowed in there? How many can get there? It's huge. I've seen that, Brendan. As soon as it lifted there, you know, the home teams in the league there, for example, the lift off that group of fans.
Definitely. You know what, Brendan? And just on that, like, we've had 500 at the last couple of games, and just a word to the parents that have been, you know, with COVID and everything, we've had the parents drive the lads to training and to games over the last number of weeks to try and minimise the risk of, you know, contacts, etc. And the role they've played for the team over the last number of weeks has been fantastic. So a big shout out to the parents in that respect, Brendan.
Yeah, fair play. Well, roll on. We'll get this confirmation through, man, and all the best for the final and beyond, of course. Brendan, listen, I was just going to turn our attention to look at the county final coming up at the weekend. You know a thing or two about these county finals, and even one that is delayed. Take you back to 2002, was it? The old Eddie Brennan affair. He mightn't thank me for mentioning him again. I used to call it
that. Bring back great memories now, that particular one, Brendan.
I know, I'd rather not. If we had won it, I wouldn't mind it. But yeah, there was a bit of a saga. It started with our draw, was it? John McConnell kind of remember put in a complaint, I suppose, about Eddie's registration. Eddie had moved here, he was teaching, he'd moved up from Sligo, whatever, and it delayed. Yeah. Wasn't it? It was the actual semi-finals as well were delayed. The whole thing was delayed, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was an objection to the Eddie Brennan's residency status, I think, in that. Now, Eddie Brennan, 20-odd years later, is still living locally kind of thing. He wasn't one, you know, I suppose at the time there may have been a feeling that players were transferring clubs for no reason, but like Eddie's at the time was pure genuine, and it did kind of take a lot of the good out of it, Brendan. I know you were involved too, like, and I just felt, you know, that it just took a lot. The fact, I think it was played April the following year, and a lot of the bite was gone from it. You know, you get to a county final, you want to play it. So I'd have a huge amount of sympathy for both Kilcarran, Niamh Connell, that this has dragged on to this for different reasons and for good reasons probably, Brendan, but it has dragged on a lot. But I think it's different times now too, Brendan. I think, you know, back then, I think if you think back, Brendan, we wintered well, like, and we may not have retained the fitness levels that the guys do today. So you just think, like, I look at this Niamh Connell team and I just think, you know, they're just a finely tuned machine, so they are, and their form throughout the league has demonstrated that they're, you know, they haven't taken their foot off the brake, and they've been preparing steadily for this, knowing that it will happen, as have Kilcar, like, you know, and both teams now with their players back from the county, having the Donegal experience over for this year, you know, will really be buzzing for the final this weekend. And I think it's different times. I think back then it was just a matter of getting the thing played, and listen, we weren't great, Brendan. We were, you know, the better team beat us on the day. We didn't deserve to win it with a performance on the day back in 2002. But I think you're looking at teams that do look after themselves over the winter now, and they will be ready for the game. And I think, you know, it won't be much different now than it would have been if it had been played last September, October.
I never seen you out of shape, to be honest. You were the thoroughbred lad, to be honest. But that was
it's very nice of you to say it so, Brendan, but I don't think it's fully true.
I was just thinking back, Brendan, how long ago now the semi-finals was. It was around about the 11th of September, I think, last year. You know, Kilcar, if you remember, beat Gador. It was level at half-time. Kilcar outshot them in the second half. I think about 8-4 or 8-3 or something like that. Gador had a very poor second half. And, of course, the famous Niamh Connell Unions, that goal of Leo McClune. Do you remember in the bit of controversy around that in the extra time? AJ Gallagher had seen red. So there was all sorts happening before this final. And then, obviously, it got put back a week. And then the COVID hit and that. So, listen, that was the semi-finals. It's a long time ago now. But as you said, man, just turning now to form and where teams is at. Very, very hard to gauge. I think the smart money has to be on Niamh Connell just because of their league performances. They've just literally been too good for everybody in the league. That said, obviously, we know about the Kilcar contingent and the county balance that's in there. So somewhat of a, you know, I suppose Niamh Connell have, I suppose, you know, showing their grit and their might, and they're coming in, I suppose, in a good way. Kilkerr maybe coming in wee bit under the radar, if you like, Bren, which maybe makes them a bit dangerous in the final. I'm sure Niamh Connell will be saying, listen, this is going to be a completely different situation. But in many ways, it's hard to know who's coming into this final. Maybe you'd rather, in the Niamh Connell terms, they're playing great football. They look like they're very confident. But they'll probably never come up against a side. Now, you have to step straight up into Championship, Bren, which is a strange thing. You know, people talk about league and Championship. You always have a few Championship games before you're going to play in a final. So, in many ways, it's very hard to predict what's going to happen in this game.
Oh, it is hugely hard to predict. And, you know, Kilkerr have this kind of unknown. And as you say, they're coming in a wee bit under the radar. And the you know, Ryan and Owen and Young McLean back. And Patrick McBrady has been in good form this year, kicking scores. Have Derry given Niamh Connell the template to mark him and to try and shut him down? You know, the perceived wisdom out there is that Kilkerr, you know, may struggle defensively against the physical attributes that Niamh Connell possess, Brendan. But like, this talk has been going on for a long time, and it doesn't happen too often that Kilkerr are exposed in that area, despite all the talk about it. But like, you look at some of the physicality that Niamh Connell, like, you have Nathan Burns, Charlie McGinnis, I think Kieran Gallagher is back with them. Like, these are massive men, and they're not your typical Niamh Connell footballers down through the years. You know, they're not the type of players you're so, but they're young players that are coming in, and they're full of life, and they're going to present problems for any team that they come up against. So I'm sure that'll be a concern for Kilkerr. But Kilkerr's pace coming from deep is a threat to any team, and how you set up against that, I suppose, will be the determining factor. And Niamh Connell will know this well. They don't need, you know, that they know that they have to stop these strong runners coming from deep. And there's just so many fascinating aspects to this game, Brendan, with the different styles that both of them can produce. But you just, like, I just look at Niamh Connell, and St. Unan's had them under the cosh last year, you know, 3 points up, I think they were, Unan's, at the start of the second period of extra time. And they just seem to be able to find a way, you know, Owen McGettigan's ball, speculative ball into the square, Leo McLoone gets something on it, ends up in the net, and then Kieran Thompson, who had come on, so then kicks the point. And they just seem to have so much quality that they're able to conjure up these scores at really important times. So they are, and, you know, they've contested the last four county finals, or this is their fourth county final in a row. You know, it just shows the consistency and the quality they have. But again, it comes back to this awesome pace and power that Kilkerr can bring from deep, and shutting that down will be the Niamh Connell question, Brendan. So there are a lot of questions out there that, you know, will only be answered by the 60 minutes when the game is played. Yeah. But it does render for a massively interesting, I don't know how entertaining it will be, because we've seen some games between these teams down through the years that have, you know, been kind of low scoring and defensive. But again, I'm not as opposed to that as you, Brendan, because I get a certain bit of defender back in my day. I get a certain amount of gratification from watching good defenders, and I think we're going to see plenty of that too in the final, so we are.
Yeah. And Brendan, do you think there's been a change at Niamh Connell? Because you mentioned the fourth county final. You know, outside of the one, the scrap with Gidor, the epic trilogy, the two previous ones, they were very well beaten in it. And you know, they come back with the same system and just stuck to it and managed to get across the line. Obviously, went all the way to an Ulster final. Do you think that now has just completely changed everything at the club? Because, you know, previous to this, if this was a couple of seasons ago, Brendan, pre the championship they won, Kilkerr would be heavy favourites again getting into this, you know. So there's a, you know, and you were talking about Niamh Connell, it's basically the same players. Now, that said, man, you know, you talk about the county involvement there. Obviously, Kieran Thompson, Ethan O'Donnell, Eunan Doherty, McGettigan, McKelvey, they're all in the Donegal squad. Now, they mightn't be as important, but certainly they have those players back in, and they played the majority of the league without them. Means that in squad terms now that's the same squad in the round, Brendan, that lost heavily in those previous campaigns. So it's as if last year, you know, rejuvenated everybody to believe in kind of the cause and the system, that they've really upped their game in terms of where they were a couple of seasons ago.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the trilogy final against Gidor was probably a big factor in that. I can only imagine the amount of confidence and gratification that they would have got from getting over the line at that one, Brendan. Like, and they have so much talent about the team. Now, there is word that Romy Gettigan may have picked up an injury training last week.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure where Jack McKelvey is at. He didn't feature for Donegal, so I think he was carrying a knock, but I would imagine that he's not far away from making a return for them. But the likes of these players are hugely important for them, and they have got, they have improved this Nave Connell team, and it just shows you the infusion of youth is required to make a team progress year and year. And Nave Connell seemed to be able to do that. And like, I know from, again, my minor involvement last year, that young Daniel Gilday has come in and has kind of been quite good for them this year too, kind of thing. Another young player coming through. So they're churning out young players that are refreshing the team. And it still means, you know, the experience of the Marty Boyles, the Brendy McDyers, the Bricks, Anthony Thompson, obviously, and then Leo. And, you know, these guys now, because I suppose Leo isn't involved in the county, is able to be involved full-time in Nave Connell training, and that can only be a help too to them, so it can. So
Bryn, I get, before we get to a prediction there, which is going to be a difficult one, I get the feeling you think it could be a bit cagey.
Oh yeah, I think that's what you would anticipate, that it is going to be. There's an awful lot at stake for both teams, and both teams have hugely positive attributes. And you know, I just want to go back to Kilcar. You know, Mark McHugh plays kind of is playing his best football of his career at the moment, I think, because he's the freedom to play with his club and he doesn't have the intercounty kind of putting him off kind of thing. But I just feel that both teams have so much to gain here that they're not going to want to lose. And just the history would tell you that this is going to be a cagey affair. But, you know, a cagey affair can bring a lot of brilliant football too, Brendan, you know, and some people mightn't like these defensive setups and all that kind of thing, and none of us want to see low-scoring games, but there's some very, I suppose, as a former defender myself, I like to see kind of top-class defending, and I think you will see a lot of that, but we know the way both teams are going to set up in order to, you know, limit the potential damage that both attacking sides can inflict on each other, and there's no doubt about the potential that both teams have to do that. So it will be cagey, but if one team can get ahead early, you know, it is going to have to open up a bit, so it is, and the other team are going to have to come out and try and win the game. So there's a huge amount to play for both teams. I just feel that Nave Connell's ability to grind out results over the last number of years is exceptional, and I feel that they have now got a squad that they can introduce 4 or 5 players off the bench that will not weaken them in any way and should be enough to get them off the line. And I'm just not sure that Kilcar have that strength and depth as of yet, Brendan.
Yeah, that's interesting. So a slight tip then to our friends in Nave Connell. Listen, whoever wins it, Brendan, it's the second week of September. The championship all kicks off again, so there'll be a bit of time to maybe enjoy the night and enjoy the champions. And listen, just great to get it done, Bryn. As you said, listen, it's still a championship. It's still going to go on the record books, and it's still a huge thing for whatever club. They have gone through all the trials of the rounds, the groups, and the knockout stages to get here. They're here on merit. So listen, may the best team win at this stage, Bryn. You think it'll pass the double figures for each score? We've seen some very low scoring affairs, Bryn. It might be something around 11-10 or something around that mark, yeah?
Yeah, definitely. And listen, I suppose the one difference from your normal county final is it's a couple months later, so the pitch is, you would imagine, well, not based on the amount of rainfall we've had in the last week, but the pitches will be that bit firmer, that will be more conducive to maybe faster open play, Brendan, than going in October, November, and you know, the ball is heavier, the sod is heavier, etc. kind of thing. So, you know, that might help it in some way. So it will. But yeah, I don't expect a lot in it. I don't expect it to be massively high scoring. But I just hope we get a good game. And, you know, both teams are deserving of getting a crack at that. There's no doubt. And may the best team win on the day, Brendan.
Great stuff, Brendan. As you're right, the conditions will have a huge factor to play in that as well. Let's hope it's a good day for all. We get a good game of football. Brendan, listen, brilliant points. Thanks for covering that right across the board again. On behalf of all the county net, well done on all the work with the young lads. Want to get behind our minors this Friday and enjoy the county final at the weekend also. And I'll catch up with you at both games, hopefully. I want to wish you all the best again from everybody here.
Thanks, Davey.
All the best, sir. And earlier on today, I caught up with Ciarán Ó Cadhain, the main man in Irish news. Yes, Carr, how are you today, lad? You keeping all right?
I'm very well, Brent. Yourself?
A manic Monday. I'm sure you're typing and jotting and Googling and doing all sorts
there. I have had to take Manic Monday off to look after two weans, and believe me, typing and jotting is a whole lot handier than that, carry on.
Brilliant stuff, Carr. And Carr, just at this point, it's Monday here. It's earlier in the day. There hasn't been an official word on the throne situation around a possible delay in the All-Ireland semi?
Nothing concrete. Obviously, the story's gone about over the weekend, and depending on what WhatsApp rumours you believed, I saw a great WhatsApp rumour about Mickey Moyna giving the players all lemons so they could test positive. They use them in their tests, so they could test positive. So there's lots of WhatsApp stories, and you wouldn't believe 95% of them, but... No, there's definitely an issue there. It's definitely a major issue. You know, the three or four boys that it wiped out for the Ulster final, they could cope with. The numbers that are being speculated about this week are obviously increased and would have a massive detrimental impact on Tyrone if they were having to play their All-Ireland semi-final this Sunday. I would say we're early on Monday here and there's no decision, but I would be surprised if the game goes ahead this weekend, the way things are looking.
Yeah, and listen, Carr, I know there'll be rumours not coming out. There's certain counties there in management I would think are capable of that, but Tyrone did seem to be very much playing by the book and all this in terms of they're doing everything right, and maybe some other counties would be keeping things hidden away or keeping players isolated without saying anything, but Tyrone do seem to have been one county who's been very honest in this whole pandemic and these situations we have to deal with.
They have, to be fair to them. I would know that, you know, during the lockdown last summer, running into the Winter Championship, they didn't train until the counties were allowed back to train, and it maybe hampered them, where other counties maybe weren't as tight on the rules. It's just a very difficult situation. Like, there's club games being called off left, right and centre around the province. It's particularly in the Mid-Ulster area at the minute, around, you know, that whole Cookstown, Marfelton, Gannon area, there's a very high number of cases. And I suppose then when you put that together with a group of boys in the changing room and in cars together and in buses and whatever they're in, you know, it's just an unavoidable part of the world we're living in at the minute. Like, people are going to pick it up, and you can't dictate who's going to get it and when they're going to get it. And it's unfortunate for Tyrone that their outbreak has come at this stage when their preparations for an already very difficult game are being severely hampered by it.
Yeah, and Carr, you know, from an Ulster perspective, and I know Tyrone won't want to hear this, they're one of the few counties, I suppose, getting in that Monaghan game. If you take out certain players of Monaghan, you're going to say, right, that's, you know, it's a huge advantage. Those missing them, couple of players, almost balance things up, such as the quality in the squad, and particularly with McCann's performance against Donegal and Burns, and of course Logan himself, the manager, missing out. And the players in there, you thought, right, that could affect the course of the game, but such is the ability, I think, in this Tyrone squad, they're able to weather that. But is there a number, Ciarán, that takes out a squad in terms of not being able to play? Is there a certain amount of players have to test positive before it is called off?
There's no hard and fast rule in terms of that. I think it's a discretionary thing. I think, you know, we saw the case where Sligo were wiped out last year and just didn't get to play their opening Connacht Championship game. They had cases the week of the game and just had to forfeit the game. And it's a different scenario for an All-Ireland semi-final, and the GAA would be very, very keen to have the game played. I would imagine that there'd be no circumstances under which they wouldn't try and exhaust every avenue to get the game played, and whether that's this weekend or the following weekend, or, you know, as some stories have it, that, you know, Tyrone are maybe going to seek a 2-week postponement, which is unlikely. I don't see them getting a 2-week postponement in any case, but I would say a week postponement would allow for the All-Ireland semi-final perhaps not to be a farcical situation where Tyrone are having to field a team without, you know, you're hearing numbers between 11 and higher. You know, without that number of players out of their squad, you know, it would demean any Kerry victory. It would demean the All-Ireland semi-final a wee bit. And for the value of a week's grace, when there's an opportunity to push the All-Ireland final back by a single week as well, it seems like the sensible course of action at this stage.
Yeah, if that was to save it, of course, that brings in the scary scenario, Cathair, that if a week's not enough, you know, you're really trying to squeeze everything in, or you're delaying the All-Ireland, which again has impacts right across the board. But Cathair, is it strange that this hasn't happened before in county squads? Well, I know there's been an odd instance of it, but you'd think with what was going on in the country, there would have been a lot more of it. Was it how county teams were managing it, or has the recent outbreak from the Ulster final maybe caused this mini outbreak in Tyrone? Has it just been unlucky?
I'd say it's probably a lot of unlucky at the minute. As I said, that you know the case numbers around the Mid Ulster area are very high at the minute, just per chance, if you like, and it's made it more likely that the Tyrone team would get caught up on it. I think there also has been a wee bit of a relaxation in terms of people's attitudes towards it over the last wee while, and then you throw in, and again, I don't know the situation in Tyrone or their squad, but just in general, you know, the numbers of under 30s, particularly in the north, who are going and getting vaccinated is quite low. Yeah. You know, the under 30s are not taking the vaccine in a lot of cases, and that, you know, while a lot of the fellas in that age group won't get particularly sick maybe with the virus, they're still maybe passing it around, and they're still testing positive for it, and they're still having to then isolate, and there's the knock-on effect of all that. So it's just difficult. You know, as you say, a week's postponement should cover them, because as far as I'm aware now, everybody in the squad was tested over the weekend. So whether positive or negative, anybody positive, there's a 10-day isolation period for them. That would take them up to next Wednesday or next Thursday at the latest. And so they would be available to play the game, provided they're not actually too sick with the virus. But you know, I think that the GAA's way of looking at it, you know, that's outside the 10-day window. So if we've been fair enough, we've given them a week's grace, and I would say that is possibly the most likely outcome.
Yeah, indeed. And listen, Cathair, you and your buddies there in Irish News, I mean, the coverage of Ulster football and all football is unbelievable, and all GAA, really, it's by far the go-to paper, and even friends of mine down the country would have the same attitude towards us. You do unbelievable coverage there, Cathair. But Cathair, just switching to the Ulster Football Championship this year, and there seems to be a small bit of a renaissance, I think, going on, particularly with Armagh coming back in now and looking like Derry will as well. Now, outside of forgetting about all Ireland tilts and that, there does seem to be a coming together now of I suppose of counties that would have always been at the top table that have dropped off, coming back to compete. I think in terms of, we look at how dead a lot of the provincials are, I think the Ulster Championship in the next few years is going to get better and better.
It is. Thanks, by the way, Britton. I'll send you up that money later on.
I mean that honestly. There's no harm in a compliment, but it's the truth.
Thank you. Look, there's no doubt about it. Like the gap in the Ulster Championship is closing. You know, I've had a few conversations, and maybe it's just the wee bit of a blinker Derry man, but I honestly believe had Derry got over Donegal, that they could have won Ulster. I think Armagh were obviously, you know, very, very wide open in the first half against Monaghan, and yet had enough about them. They did turn that game on its head and then lost it again. So the gap between the top four and five, certainly Derry have come into that group. You have Tyrone, Donegal, Armagh and Monaghan in it. I think, and obviously Cavan won the Ulster title this year, didn't go so well for them, last year, didn't go so well for them this year. So there's no doubt that competitiveness of Ulster in terms of just being a competitive spectacle is probably over the next few years when it reach a peak. You know, I think it, you know, because it's always said, you know, anybody can win Ulster and it's a lottery and all the rest. Sometimes that's a bit of nonsense too. Like, and you know, through most of the 2000s, Tyrone and Armagh won it. Through most of the last decade, like Donegal were in, 10 Ulster finals in 11 years, won a fair few of them, and were the dominant force, and if it wasn't them, it was Monaghan, and then, you know, Tyrone came back into it later on, but, you know, you could have picked the winners at the start of the year, which I think if you're looking at it in the next 18 to 24 months, you know, you're genuinely realistically saying that there's five teams that could win Ulster, and I think it's the first time in a while that we've been able to say that, but, you know, it's how that translates. And I don't honestly believe that we have an All-Ireland winner in the province at the minute. I don't believe we have anybody that looks like an All-Ireland winner over the next few years. So, you know, it's the question over the competitiveness, but what standard is it actually at? How high is the level of it? And I think I don't see Tyrone winning All-Ireland. I don't see Donegal winning the All-Ireland at the minute. And you know, Armagh, Monaghan, Derry, Cavan are all a good wee bit away from that at the minute. So it's that question as well.
And tell me here, down under 20s coming so close to winning the All-Ireland as well. You know, a couple of points up going into the closing stages. They were just hit by a scoring blitz by Roscommon. Is Conor Laverty the man there to lead them back to the top as well? They certainly, listen here, they have all the ingredients, as we know. You want a football-mad county, you want a good club scene. You know, you want a big love for the game. It's all there in County Down.
A lot of it is in place. I know that they would feel that their structures in terms of harnessing and developing county teams maybe aren't the strongest, and that has held them back, and that will continue to hold them back. And ultimately, you're looking at Tick Derry, you know, 5 Ulster finals in 6 years, 1 in 3 of them getting their hands on an All-Ireland, really. Like, you know, that's a 6-year gap, or that's a 6-year window where you're saying, right, well, there's 6 good teams in a row almost. That, you know, that should be enough to compete at senior level. That is a brilliant down under 20 team. I thoroughly enjoyed watching them. The Ulster final was a brilliant game. The game on Saturday evening was a brilliant game, and they were unlucky, but it's one team as well, and I would just be a wee bit cautious in terms of, you know, putting down back into the group of contenders on the back of one under 20 team. They need a succession of teams, and I think Conor Laverty knows that. He knows that if he gets 5 or 6 of those boys through in 2 or 3 years' time, that's the basis of a senior team. If you can hang on to a few of the established players that are there as well. Conor would also engage the Kilcoo fraternity, a lot of whom haven't played for the county in recent years, and Conor would stand the best chance of getting those boys out. But for me, for him, I think it's a job for next time. I think he would be better maybe hiding away from it this time, let somebody else have it for a couple of years, see what comes of it. And then when those fellas are maybe more ready for it and a better age profile, I think Conor's time will come. He'll manage down without any shadow of a doubt. Mm. But I think for him, it's maybe wait a turn, wait a time.
He seems like somebody on the up and up. He seems very well got everywhere he goes. All right, Ciar, we had the bank holiday last weekend, so I was down at the Ulster final, so we didn't actually cover it in that. I was just looking back to the famous semi final there where Tyrone had got the better of Monaghan, and it was 113-15. The same scoreline as it ended up the last day, and more heartbreak for Monaghan. It was an amazing game, Gareth. I texted just the last night about the goalkeepers, and there was so much drama going on in it, but you just always felt that it was going to go Tyrone's way.
It was just, I don't particularly buy, in terms of analysing that game at the weekend or 2 weeks ago, I don't particularly buy the idea that it was a typical Tyrone Monaghan Croke Park encounter, and that Monaghan had the luck got joining me now, but that Monaghan had to lose the game because it was Croke Park, and that Tyrone always beat Monaghan and Croke Park. I didn't buy that narrative, really. Yeah. I actually fancied Monaghan before the game, and I still, you know, I just felt that by their own standards that they had set this year, it was such a poor first half from them.
Yes.
Their second half was very, very good, but they just left themselves too much to do. Look, there's definitely something there that they're losing 1-point games. So I was disappointed with the fact, from their perspective, with the fact that, you know, they had chances at the end. They had 4 chances in the last couple of minutes. And when you go back to that All-Ireland semi-final a couple of years ago, it was the same thing, that they had a couple of late chances and they snatched at them and they missed them and they didn't take the right shots.
Yeah.
And they did the exact same thing again in the Ulster final. And for me, you know, we hear county teams and people get fed up with the language, and teams talk about learnings and taking lessons from defeats and all the rest of it. And that, you know, 3 years down the line to commit the same crime, if you like, and not pick the lesson out of it. I just thought that was the most disappointing thing for Monaghan, that they passed up chances that they could have at least got extra time out of the game.
Yeah. It did seem like you said in the extra time. That said, you know, you were clutching the straws at the end, I suppose, where Monaghan maybe could have conjured up an equaliser. At the end of the day, Tyrone on the break a few times almost buried him in the game. Kiara, but you know what was very poignant for me at the end of the game, Kiara, was the Monaghan huddle, and you could see McEnany in there, and there was a real sense of here we're going to be back here again. Now, I know in a lot of those players the nucleus have been around, they've obviously mixed it with some new talent this year, but there did seem to be a real look from them. You know, you often see the defeated teams walk off and it's kind of just lick your wounds and away you go. There seemed to be a real message that, listen, you know, we have to learn from this. I know just what you're saying, Kerr, but I know McEnany's come back in there and the side's been rejuvenated, but you get the purpose that Monaghan, after a few poor seasons here, particularly in Ulster, are really looking to up their game again, which is again going back to the Ulster Championship thing, where it's going to be a fascinating couple of years in terms of teams are on the up.
It's definitely was a very different Monaghan team this year from we'd seen probably in the last three seasons, really. They've been flat since Malachy Rourke's last year, and obviously the one-off game against Cavan last year, they're actually very good in the first half, and then just over-egged the thing in terms of keeping ball and got caught in the Cavan game last year, which is a big disappointment for them. I think there's a massive freshness around the setup. I would think Donny Buckley has brought a lot to their training. They have developed the way that they're playing, even though actually part of the flaw in Croke Park as well. You know, Darren Hughes had done well in the role against Armagh, and he's brilliant at it, but he didn't have a great game against Tyrone, and then the fact that they withdrew him out of midfield and played five up front, it kind of allowed Tyrone to dominate the game, and it was when Monaghan really pushed up and had a proper cut at it that they actually came back into the game. But there's a real freshness about the Monaghan team over the last few while the names have started to change almost. You know, the core is still there. Hughes, McManus, all the rest, and Carol O'Connell and Ryan Wiley, they're there, but what's around them has changed a lot over the last couple of years. And you're looking at the likes of Aaron Mulligan and Micheál Bannigan and those boys coming in and making a real stamp on it and developing physically. That's a big thing over the last, particularly this year, I've noticed. You know, I suppose particularly Micheál Bannigan, you know, just came back and looked like he'd ate somebody over the winter. He had a totally different frame on him, like, and that's very, very important. Like, you see that in the top teams. Like, look at Mayo this year, and there's been a whole lot of chat about them. I remember being the All-Ireland final last year and thinking, if you could put a stone on Tommy Conroy and Ryan O'Donoghue, you'd have some serious footballers, and that is exactly what they have done. They have come back this year physically very different footballers than they were last year, and that's a big part of why Mayo are going as well as they are, even in Killian O'Connor's absence. And Monaghan are down that track as well. It just takes time, just takes a wee while to get all those things right, and I think that they'll keep improving, but the McManus quandary is still a big one. How they cope whenever the day comes that he says, look, I can't do it anymore, my hips are done here.
Yeah,
it's
like the Murphy scenario here. We're not looking forward to that day. Cara, just before we get to the semi-finals, just a word on the goalkeeping and the drama of that the last day. You know, we've got the stage where they're almost playing like sevens goalkeepers. You know, it takes a certain keeper to do that. Obviously, the two of them are first class. I mean, some of the stuff went on. I mean, the beg and tackle. I mean, I never thought I'd see something like that in Croke Park. And There's a terrible, I suppose, tense element to leaving the goals free. You know, somebody gets the ball in, you think there's nobody in net. Of course, anybody can dive in and save the ball, but it creates a massive tension then when the opposition gets the ball and the goalkeeper's chasing back. And that, I'm not too sure how you feel about the thing. How do you see that playing out in the future?
Well, as a very poor club goalkeeper myself, funny, I've had two instances in the last couple of weeks now. One where I joined the last attack and we were a point down. They gave the ball away and I got caught for the goal. And then the second incident on Friday night, we were actually 5 points down. And having watched the game last weekend, we were a man down with a man sent off. And I came out and played wing half back. And we cut the gap back to two. And the opposition couldn't get out. They couldn't get their kick out. So I didn't do anything. All I was doing was standing and marking the man.
Yeah.
But it, you know, I think we're seeing a lot of that. The trend of inter-county football will follow on, I think, in the club championships this year. That is going to be a massive trend. I think you're going to see an awful lot of goalkeepers playing out, carrying ball. The fellas that are comfortable doing it. Now, the worry is you're going to have managers who last goalkeepers who are uncomfortable doing it to do it. And then you're in dodgy territory. But it's like anything. It's everything's worth doing if you have the skill set to do it. And Began and Morgan, and I suppose to a point, Sean Paton, I don't think he's the most comfortable footballer in the world. And he doesn't necessarily look very comfortable when he has the ball in his hands. But he's comfortable enough to come and carry it 50 yards, and then he'll always just hand pass it off to the nearest man. Hmm. But it can be a very, very effective.
I mean, Began obviously having a shot the last day. I mean, you're right at the point where there's things there I never thought I'd see. Can you imagine showing somebody 20 years ago a game of that magnitude in Croke Park, and the keepers coming up having a shot from play? It would seem surreal, but this is where we're at, you know.
It's mad, and I think it's great. And as you rightly said there, like, there's the risk reward. Really and truly, Matty Donnelly should have put the ball in Monaghan's net and finished the game, and he shouldn't have allowed Rory Began to get back. But had that happened, then you have people starting to doubt the whole thing and rethink it and go, God, like, there, that was a 1-point game. Did Rory Began really need to be out there on that kick out? They got caught, then the game's over, the ball's in the back of the net, 4 points, game's over. So, you know, the margins are wafer thin as to whether it's a success or an absolute disastrous failure.
You're going to attempt it to perfect it yourself, anyway, Cahir. I look forward to hearing more updates of that.
I was done 10 years ago, and even more done now. The idea of coming out playing wing half back at 33 is not very appealing.
And you know what? After Began made that tackle on Donnelly, he did this mad flick up off the ground as well, which was really dangerous because there was throwing men all around him. It was as if he just kind of cruises around the pitch. Really different athlete, Began, and really cool and composed. But Cara, you just mentioned the Mayo lads there. You know, Killian O'Connor gets injured, and they think, right, Mayo's. We keep building the case for Mayo, keep saying never writing him off. They thought, right, they can't do it without their top scorer. He's their guy. Who's going to step up? There's going to be panic and fear. Now Mayo have built up a bit of a head of steam, particularly after that second half against Galway. Dublin, you know, are out of sorts and somewhat. Well, it sounds crazy, Cara, but one in fatigue. I mean, the magic number was always getting to five, you know. Have Dublin got the stage now, as we know, that their squad isn't as good as it was? They're 15, obviously still is in the round it. You would still say on their day they're the best 15, but they certainly haven't been in the groove. And many people are pointing to, I suppose, Mayo, it's never semi-finals that they don't win, Cara. So could this be set up for finally breaking this hoodoo of number one beating Dublin and Mayo maybe taking a title?
It's certainly set up for the first part of that. I don't know if Mayo would take the title. I think Kerry will beat anybody that they come up against. But in terms of Mayo and Dublin, like, you're right, Mayo have made significant improvements even over the last 12 months again. Like, I have to say, I give James Horne enormous credit for the job that he has done over the last few years. Like, when he came back into the Mayo job, obviously been watching him closely when he was away and seeing what had happened. And the biggest thing that he did was he recognised, look, you know, Aidan O'Shea, who's obviously still there, but, you know, Keith Higgins, Colin Boyle, these fellas are, if they're not in their last legs, but they're going to be gone in 2-3 years' time. And we can't have a drop-off. We can't suddenly lose 10 players out of our starting team and have to replace the 10 of them with fresh faces. So he has, over 3 years, he has built Jordan Flynn and Dermot O'Connor and Conor Loftus into midfield. And he's built Ryan O'Donoghue, and he's built Tommy Conroy, and he's built Oisin Mull, you know, and he has developed Stephen Cohen. He's developed the team over a 3-year period where he's given those boys loads of football, absolutely loads of league football, developed them physically, kept them at it, put them into games where they mightn't have just been quite ready, but he was giving them the games. And I think they are reaping the rewards of that. Now, obviously, they've made massive physical developments as young players over the last 18 months. I think I was down at the Leinster final last week. I saw Dublin in the flesh. I think they're definitely not firing. I think we're seeing the impact of what you mentioned there, the fact that their bench isn't strong. I think we're seeing that their A and B games in-house couldn't be of the standard that they were, and also that there's a lot of fellas in the team who are now getting comfortable, which is the one thing that nobody in Dublin could have been for so long, because the minute you got comfortable was the minute you were out of the team. And Dublin just do not have the depth, the resources now to start cutting boys. As I said, you know, you remember back to the drawn final against Mayo with the two own goals.
Yes.
On the following day, like how ruthless Jim Gavin was in terms of his changes for an All-Ireland final. Mm. You know, really big calls. Dropped Bernard Brogan. I think did he drop, was it Michael Darragh McCauley? You know, massive calls and put in serious operators. And I just don't think at the minute that they, you know, on the basis of the last day, I've never seen Conor Callaghan play as badly.
Yes.
But he's not going to get dropped. He's never going to get dropped. And I think, you know, that comfort has set in a wee bit. I think there'll be a backlash in Dublin. I think Mayo have to be prepared for 20 minutes of just sticking in the game. I think Dublin will improve a whole lot. I think their shooting will improve. Their efficiency the last day was terrible by their standards, 47% in the first half, which, you know, they're an 80% team most of the time. And I think that's something that they can fix quite easily. So I'm expecting a backlash from Dublin over 20-25 minutes, but Mayo have the legs for this. And if they can sustain themselves, if they can keep the goals out in the early part of the game and build themselves into it, I think they have the legs to really, really trouble Dublin. And if they can do that, there's goals in it for them. And I think, you know, they're definitely the potential for a Mayo win.
Yeah, and see, the thing about that is, Kerr, how do you reignite that bite? You just mentioned it there. You've got the overhanging side that you're going to get dropped, like as you mentioned in the Jim Gavin times there. You know, and the bite was always there because Dublin, there was a buzz around them. Now that that's gone, I think that that bit of winning fatigue, it sounds crazy, but listen, we're human. Kerr, you keep doing everything and it gets repetitive and tactical and the buzz goes out of it. As you said, the A and B games, maybe not as snappy. It's all right before that match to say we want this performance. We just haven't seen it. I'm just wondering if they're flat, as you said, you're spot on. Mayo's conditioning is something that's gone to another level. It was always a hallmark of their teams, and I think it's something that Horan realised. It was probably one of their main attributes as a side, was just their physicality, and that's why when they went at Dublin, they could go at Dublin. It's something he's brought back in. So I'm just looking, as you said there, the first 20 in that is massive. Even the first 10, to see how Dublin go at the game. If they're a wee bit kind of lackluster, I think Mayo will just go for the juggler, and we could have a like what you call a massive end to this this winning streak. That if they're not on it, Mayo's going to go for the juggler.
But look, big time. I think the first 10 minutes are going to be crucial, because Dublin are always capable of scoring goals. The nature of the way Mayo play, they're susceptible to leaking the odd goal, and as we've seen, you know, ultimately, for long periods of the All-Ireland final last year, Mayo were the better team, particularly in the first half, but the goals absolutely killed them, nailed them to the canvas. And then when the game started to get away from them a wee bit, they weren't just as physically prepared. And I think particularly of go back to Ryan O'Donoghue, who I remember doing a piece after the game. I can't remember exactly how many times he had touched the ball in the first half, whether it was 17 or 18 times in the first half, and he had set up 4 or 5 scores and was playing really, really well. But Dublin moved Owen Merchant onto him, and he just couldn't shake Owen Merchant, because Merchant was as quick as him, and O'Donoghue had the physicality to throw him off. I think he does now. I think he's going to be a different, you know, you'd be looking at O'Donoghue now to go and tick ball and carry it at them and really run at them and try and tick the defender's space, which he's capable of. Those sorts of things are big elements of the game, because I think Mayo will play a running game that will absolutely be confident that that'll trouble Dublin, and I think it will trouble Dublin. And it's just the long running thing for Mayo. It's not even so much keeping out the, or sorry, not even so much scoring the goals at the other end, because they always seem to find a way to score enough, but it's keeping them out. And that is the big, big challenge that lies ahead of them.
It's Achilles' heel. Thankfully, it was there in 2012. Cara, just last word on the Kerry Tyrone one. Listen, hopefully it does go ahead. It's maybe not looking good at the minute, but when it does, Cara, a lot being made of the hammer early in the year in Killarney, the six goals. How does that play now? Is it a plus or minus, do you think, for either side?
I think it's not a huge factor in the game, to be honest. I think, Kerry have a habit of hammering through. Look, if you go back through the last 15 years, I think that was the fifth hammering that Tyrone have taken in Killarney. Not just losing, hammered down there. Like, they just, whatever it is about Killarney, they have a terrible record. If you look at the Tyrone team that day and the way they lined out, the shape that they played, the personnel that they played in certain positions, nothing really that resembles the team that's going to play at the weekend. All Ireland semi-final, like, Tyrone aren't going to, Kerry aren't going to score six goals in Croke Park against Tyrone at the minute. Now, Kerry are a serious goal threat at the minute, and they're averaging three a game over the season. Like, what is it? I think that's 21 goals they've scored in a very, very short season already. They were averaging 3.19 or 3.18, something like that. Yeah. Crazy numbers, yeah. And playing Division One football, so like, they're capable of destroying any defence. I think for Tyrone, the big issue that they have is matchups. I think in terms of man marking defenders, they've got McNamee and they've got Hamsey, and that the problem at the minute is that you have Clifford, you have O'Shea, and you have Paddy Clifford.
Yes.
And 3-2 doesn't go. Yes. And I think Conor Myler is playing so well for Tyrone in an attacking sense that it'd nearly be a shame to take him out of that role. But they might be looking at it thinking, look, we need you to teal Sean O'Shea. We need you to just go on him, dog him, and do that job for us, because we don't really have anybody else who's built for that. That's providing Rory Brennan isn't fit, but to me, I don't know if Rory Brennan's suited to any of those three jobs, but maybe Paddy Clifford. But it's just, I think Tyrone have a real issue there as to how they get their team right on the day. They get their positions and their matchups right, because if you don't get them right, Kerry will pinpoint the weakness and they will get at it. And I think also the fact that Callum McShane's not fully fit, obviously he carried the flame for them in the All-Ireland semi-final a couple of years ago and was a big threat to the Kerry defence that day. And they're just, I think, on the heat of the big day, they're going to miss him.
Yeah, it could come down to something small like that. All right, listen, let's hope it goes ahead. Cara, listen, fantastic insights there into the season in Ulster and the semi-finals ahead. And listen, thanks so much for joining us on the DL Debate.
Good man, Brenton. Thank you.
All the best, boy. Check this. Yes, that was Cathair O'Kane there. Unfortunately, we're out of time on the show here on Highland Radio. If you want to hear the rest of that interview with Cathair, tune into the podcast on highlandradio.com, Spotify or iTunes. That's the end of the show here this evening. A wrap again. I want to thank Cathair, of course. Earlier in the show, Brenda Kilcoyne. I want to thank Kevin for producing. Great St. Noel's man that he is. He's doing a fine job looking after me here. Our head of sport, Oisin Kelly. I'll speak to you all next week.
The DL Debate, presented by Brendan Devaney, is in association with Sarah's Kitchen at Sister Sarah's Letterkenny. Serving food you'll love with outdoor dining. Book now and enjoy the Sarah's Experience.